So, joining us on the reverse stick this evening is Mr. Andrew Wilson, direct from Spain. Andrew's got lots to talk about this evening, and he's been busy making his commentary debut over the weekend, and he's got lots going on with the Spanish national team. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Very well, sir. Peeing down with rain here at the moment, so winter has finally approached for us. A little bit different from the beautiful sunny weather that you experienced when you were over here earlier in the year.
Yeah. I mean, we've got similar weather here. Winter doesn't want to leave us at the moment.
Yeah, dear. Well, to be fair, it was a gorgeous 20 degrees over the weekend, but there we go. Andrew, so much to talk about. Now, those that follow us and follow the Hockey Live would have seen that we were putting out some live streams from the weekend from the Final Four there in Spain. And, of course, you made your commentary debut. Can you tell us a bit about the games that were on and your experience behind the mic?
So, yeah, the games this weekend, we played the semi-finals for both the men and the women on Saturday at the Polo Club in Barcelona. And then on Sunday, we played the two finals. And this year, there are a couple of surprises about teams who made the Final Four in both men and women, or teams that didn't make it. For example, in the men, Club Egara didn't make it. They won the National Cup earlier on this year. They've been in the Final Four for years and years and years, so that was quite a surprise for the league there. But it wasn't a surprise, for example, that Junior took their place. Junior had a fantastic season in the men, and then they then went on to make the final and lost on shootouts. And in the women, perhaps the surprise entry was Real Sociedad from the north of Spain, but also not quite a surprise because they play the knockout games really, really well. I mean, their league season was quite average. They only won four games out of the entire regular season. But because we have a quarterfinals playoff system in Spain, the top eight teams go through and play each other. And quarterfinals over two games means that you've got two opportunities to get through to the Final Four, which is really nice. I think it reflects the international competition, well, the previous international competition quite well, and really helps everyone to get to know how to play elimination games. It makes it far more exciting as well.
Now, of course, this was your first time commentating and in Spanish. Very impressive. Didn't understand a bloody word that you were saying. But what was that like for you as first time to take on that kind of role?
It was amazing. I've wanted to do it for ages. If I'm telling you the truth, I've listened to people commentating for several years now, and I've always wanted to get involved because I think I can do a good job. I think I've got quite a bit of knowledge to add to give some colour to the commentary. And I was really excited when I was told I was going to do it. In actual fact, I originally wasn't down to do it. The idea was that if Polo made the final in the women, that I'd do it because the guy doing the co-commentary is from Polo. And in the end, they didn't make the final, but then he had to go and do the Catalan version of the commentary, so I did the Spanish version. And it was made really easy because the guy leading the commentary was so good at his job, just doing the basics of filling in who's passing the ball to who, the action that's going on, and he just gave natural pauses, which were easy to pick up on and just to flow into with information about what's going on tactically, why teams have been playing like this according to how they've been working throughout the season, predictions, what they're going to do in the next quarter. It was really exciting.
Fantastic.
Andrew, is there anything that once you were in that seat and it was all going really surprised you that you weren't expecting?
I think the poor view that we had of the pitch. we were right next to the dugouts on the pitch, but we weren't higher up, so we couldn't see the corners on our side of the pitch. So I'd have to be looking at the monitor every so often to see what was happening. That was the real surprise, that we weren't given a more elevated position. But I also was slightly surprised that I wasn't caught out on certain players' names as well, because although I coach in the league and I'm one of the national team coaches, there are players who come from outside the country or players who come up from second teams that don't make such a big impact on their team. So as a coach, when you're playing your game, you don't really pay too much attention to them because they don't have that much effect. So I was surprised when I wasn't caught out by having to say their names. I could get around that quite easily. And the guy doing the commentary was really good at that as well.
Well, I've just made a little note here. What's Spanish for crash ball?
Pelotazo.
Did you ever use it?
Deliberately thinking of you guys.
We wouldn't have known.
there were many instances. For example, I commented about the fact that Junior, when they were getting to Real Sociedad's 25-yard zone, the final quarter, the attacking final quarter, they were getting down to the right-hand side and they were just hitting balls into the circle. And they were either going flat and being picked up or going too high. Uh-huh. And in that moment, I made a comment about it, but I deliberately didn't use crash balls, thinking of you guys.
Thank you, Andrew.
We've made some kind of impact, I guess. So you mentioned the Spanish national team there, and obviously one of the coaches that are involved. We've got a big event coming up very soon, and no doubt the plans are all in place for you guys. So what's happening with the national setup at the moment?
So right now, this week, we've got a week off from training. We've just come out of a phase where we did some performance center sessions in Barcelona and Madrid because we had the group divided across the country. And last week we did our final two sessions with the players who didn't qualify for the final four, just to do some corner work and some technical work with them. This week the girls and the staff get a free week so that we can just relax and recharge our batteries, because lots of the staff work with club sides as well, because economically it's what you need to do in Spain if you want to dedicate yourself to this sport. And on Monday we go to Madrid to play a 5-game series against India. We go straight from Madrid to London to play on the World Cup pitch against England. Then we got 2 days off and we go to Holland to play a Four Nations against China, Japan and Holland. Then we get 10 days off. We go back to Madrid and we play 3 games against Canada. And then we travel to London, I think on the 17th of July. We play a friendly against the States. And then we start our first game against Argentina on the 22nd.
Wow, that's a lot of hockey, Andrew. Are you training all through that period as well? How much during those passages where you're playing games, are you training?
Depends what you define as training. We'll be on the pitch, we'll be doing lots of corner work, especially. The girls who aren't selected for games will do training sessions in the group of 4 or 5 of them with one of the coaches. And we will have occasionally a session where we maybe play a little bit. But the real focus at this stage is just on gameplay and specific situations that we're going to find in the competition. We've just come out of the phase where we've been doing a lot of technical work, especially in circles. And that was our focus from about January up until now. And because we've got so many games, a lot of our time has just got to be spent recovering. And making the most of the time that we're recovering to do meetings, look at video, do corner sessions, shootouts, and a bit more static work.
I was going to mention the video there. Would you be watching more video than you would actually be having time with hockey sticks in your hand at that stage?
No, because we don't want to overload the girls too much on that aspect. They know quite a bit about the oppositions already because we've been feeding them information. We have, for example, we have groups that are on the internet through different servers that we send clips to the girls and they look at the opposition in their own time. We may, for example, I'm looking at Argentina. I've been looking at two of their games against Great Britain from a couple of months ago today, taking out clips to then compare that to, for example, India. So things that India might do that are similar to Argentina, so the girls can then put it into practice. But we try and limit the amount of video that we're going to do just because it's so full on, especially this first phase.
Now, you mentioned just a moment ago about the players being divided across the country. You know, we've spoken about this sort of offline, but can you give the listeners a bit of an idea about what that division is on players? And it's, you know, it's not just necessarily everybody all together at the same time.
Yeah, because Spain is quite a big country compared to my home country of England, where the girls are all centralised. And we have two performance centres, one in Barcelona and one in Madrid, where the majority of national league clubs are in Spain. And the majority of our players, from the seniors right down to the under-16s, are in performance centres, which work midweek at lunchtimes. So the seniors will be working between one and three times a week in those performance centres, depending on the time of season. But we also have players in the north of Spain who don't have access to performance centres, so we have to coordinate with their clubs so that maybe they're training, doing extra sessions with their coaches, or maybe they're training with boys, maybe under-18s or the men's twos or the men's ones, depending on the club. And a couple of times a year they'll come go down to Madrid, those girls. And then we also have players in we've got a couple of players in Holland, in Germany and in Belgium, who, similarly to the girls in the north of Spain, have to add in extra sessions with their club, or normally with the boys' teams, so that everyone's working to the same principles and the same loading.
So that club support's very important to make it all come together for you.
It's key. The way that the politics are set up in Spain is that all decisions with regards to league structure and anything that the Spanish Federation has to do or wants to do has to be approved by the clubs at the General Assembly. Whereas I believe in England, for example, England hockey can almost do what they want, which is a very generalised way of saying it. I don't know about other federations, but in Spain, the clubs have to approve every action that we do. So they approve budgets, they approve everything. So in that regards, we have to have a really good relationship with the clubs, and especially the coaches and the team and the staff of the teams, so that we can do everything we want to do with them. So we've gone through different phases since we came into the team in 2013, we go through different phases where we give more leeway or less leeway to the clubs, because we know that at some point we're going to need their support with the players that both of our teams use. And that's a very delicate situation. We're very lucky that Adrian, the head coach, was a club coach, or actually during his tenure at the beginning as a national team coach. So he knows all the coaches that there are, and he constantly has meetings with them and asks them if they need anything from us, talking about the players, how they're working within the clubs. And I think the communication that Adrian especially has with the clubs, but also our physios and our fitness coach, is vital just to make sure everyone's on the same page. And the great thing is that lots of the club coaches have also worked internationally at some point, or they know, or they have family members who have worked internationally or played internationally. So they know what's needed. And they know what players have to do if we want to win something internationally. And the men's side of things, I understand it's a little bit more difficult. There's a little bit more resistance from clubs about players going to do performance centre sessions. They're a bit more protective of their players and information regarding injuries that they may have, that which may be shared because of their activity with the national team, which for me is completely ridiculous. I think it's counterproductive to getting Spanish hockey to move it on in the world. But it seems to be just a couple of individuals, a couple of certain coaches who are successful in their own right. And the problem being with the lots of players have contracts with their clubs, but they also have contracts with the national team. And some even, for example, had contracts with the Indian Hockey League. So there are lots of conflicts there, who has priority and at what time of year, according to the contracts.
Andrew, I take it this would mean that as a coaching staff, you'd prioritise certain events, knowing that, like a World Cup, for example, you want all your best players available at the time for a World Cup. In those, perhaps, off times when there's not a bigger prize to play for, does that mean that you're going to the next tier pool of players?
We deliberately invite a large group of players to training camps. For example, now on Monday, we reduced the group from 24 to 22. And then in a couple of weeks' time, we reduced that to 20 for the final push for the World Cup. And we try and do that to give the younger players a chance to get games. For example, historically we see German teams, especially German men's teams, who from competition to competition, you'll see names on the list that you've never seen before, played 30 games. And you're like, where's this guy come from? And he's incredible. And we wanted to follow that model, but with our twist on it. So we have girls who haven't been selected for next week's camp and the following phase, but they're very important for the next few years, and they've got 30 games already under their belt. Now that means that, for example, last summer we played without Gigi in our squad, Gigi being one of our more experienced players. We played the Europeans without Guti or Gigi, so, and they're two of our captains as well. And that gave us a chance to get new players into competition. So I think last year we played three competitions and we never took the same team. The team's very similar, but we got new players in, and we got players who now have a World 3 under their belt, or a Euros under their belt, or a World, or a Round 2 under their belt. And that means that, after the World Cup, if we have retirements, or, after the Olympics, if we have retirements, we got players who have got 30, 40, 50 games just ready to transition in.
You mentioned players like Gigi there. Does that also lessen the load on them as well and perhaps keep them fresher to continue longer?
Yeah, definitely. And we were talking about this the other day. We were just looking at some research about injuries that players often receive during their international career. And one of the papers that we were looking at highlighted the beginning and the end of players' careers are when they often pick up most injuries. At the beginning being because their bodies aren't necessarily adapted to the training load, and at the end because often there's maybe they're trying to do too much and they're trying to maintain that same volume of, training, but they're not capable of doing it. But also there's an emotional baggage that comes with being an international player. And the mental health of the girls is key. You know, Gigi last year didn't play with us because she needed a break. She was working and she was playing in Holland, and we decided that it was better that she had the summer off to then come back into the side. She came back in November, I think, to then push on to the Olympics. It's really important to manage players in a different way. And we were talking about our performance centre next year about maybe. We were just throwing ideas out there. Do all the girls have to do all the sessions midweek? Or do the older players who have played X number of years or have, and we'd individualize cases, do they need to be doing three sessions a week? Could they just do two? And that third session, they do just some mobility work, or they go and do their day job.
I think, the injury that most international hockey players carry away from their career is to their wallet. I think that cops the biggest hit, but that's another story.
Yes.
Well, that sounds fantastic. What I love when we talk to you, Andrew, is there's a certain cerebral nature towards your an insight into the coaching side of things. Now, of course, you do the Frank Hockey podcast, which we talk about lots on the show here, and there's a lot of people that listen to this show also listen to the Frank Hockey podcast. But of course, some people don't listen to the Frank Hockey podcast. So can you let the listeners know what that's all about and some of the people that you've had on there?
I have to say that was an incredibly professional transition there. Well done.
No one's ever praised him for a segue.
The Frank Hockey podcast is a show that I thought about setting up early last year, early 2017. I've wanted to give something back to the hockey community on a big scale for several years now. And that's really why I coach, is I just want to give back to the hockey community. And I found that I enjoy doing it at a high performance level. And so that's why I've dedicated the last 9, almost 10 years of my life to high performance coaching, because I just want people to enjoy watching good international hockey. And the Frank Hockey podcast came about because I thought, well, am I reaching enough people? And I just wanted to try something else. I wanted to get people in touch with high performance coaches so that they can get an idea of what the processes are going into developing a team, developing a staff. And so we do every week over 8 weeks, we do between 40 to an hour minute's worth of show. And then we have 3 weeks off so that I can start preparing the next series and also have a break myself. And then we get back into it. So, for example, after we have this conversation now, I'm going to go to the airport to take a friend, and I'll come back and I'll record this week's show, which is the last in this series. And we've had some fantastic guests so far. We've had Danny Carey, Adrian Locke, Jamie Mulders, Janneke Schottmann, Dave Passmore, Danny Newcomb. I mean, we've had loads. But at times it's difficult to get coaches or other performers involved because of time constraints, because everyone's busy, and we're working on in different time zones as well. So sometimes I have to do what I call a pocket podcast. So I will review or just present a resource that has inspired me to a greater extent in my development as a coach. So we've done two so far. We've looked at two books, one about winning attitudes, and the other one about periodization of your training. And really, I just want to give back to the hockey community, just to say thank you, because I've been part of hockey playing family since I was in the womb. And my whole life has been surrounded by hockey. I am what I am because of hockey. The best people I know come from hockey. And I just want to say thank you to everyone.
You just said from in the womb. What's big shout out to Dad's club, if you don't mind?
Old Baldinian Hockey Club down in Kent in England. It's the men's playing in Kent Sussex Regional Div 2 or Div 1, I think. I haven't been there for quite a few years now because I've been out in Spain. And the family is fully involved. My dad's the chairman. My mum's the secretary and plays in the first team. My sister's the ladies' captain. Her husband, well, no, fiancé, will be husband soon, plays in the men's first team. Their child will definitely play hockey. My brother doesn't play hockey because he works abroad now. So yeah, we're fully involved with the hockey community.
Now, we love all the stories about the hockey family. So for those that don't know, how did you end up in Spain and taking on a role coaching there?
So I did a year abroad for university back when I was studying Spanish, and I had the choice of either working, studying, or being part of the English language assistance program from the British Council. And I chose the latter because it was the easiest. I didn't want to study. I couldn't be bothered to find a job, basically. And through that, I had to put three regions of Spain where I'd like to work. And so I put Barcelona, Madrid and Valencia, where I knew there was hockey, just in case I got posted somewhere. But the posting was completely random. And I happened to be posted 30 minutes away from Terrassa. So I did a bit, and I had come to Terrassa in 95 for the champ, I think it was 95 for the Champions Trophy here. So I knew of two clubs here, and I just wrote to the clubs and didn't get a reply because it's difficult to get a reply over the summer from Spanish hockey clubs because people go on holiday. And then I phoned them up, and one of the clubs said, call us when you get here in September, which was quite disappointing. Another club didn't even pick up the phone. And Club Igara happened to have their new director of hockey moving into his office as I was calling. So, and he said, yeah, come, we'll give you a team. You can play a bit. And it just snowballed from there. I actually had a really bad first season. I didn't enjoy it at all, because it's difficult to break into the hockey community here, because although Terrassa it's got 200,000 people in it, it's got four National League clubs, but they're very closed off in their own community, and it's difficult to break in. And I was actually about to leave after 6 months, and I had my hand on the door to the office of the director of hockey. And he saw me and went, oh, can you come in? I wanted to come in anyway. So he started talking and offered me a job for the following year, because they liked how I worked. So I said, well, I'll think about it because I'm going away for a week. And my thought process was that a European club has just offered you a job. And at this time, the men's first team had 9 of the Spanish silver medalist team from Beijing in their team. I was currently at that point assistant coach to the men's twos, and we had 5 Spanish under 21s in there because they couldn't get into the first team because the first team was so good. And I said, even if you have a terrible year, you can say to people that you've done it. And you've gone, you worked with a Spanish club, a European top club that wants you to coach for them. And once I made that decision, actually things changed. I changed flats. I moved in with a couple of guys from the club and I started to really enjoy myself. I moved back to England to finish my degree, and I actually came out for a hockey festival with the university in Spain. And I decided to come back and say hi to everyone while I was here. And I sat down with the two directors and said, look, next week I've got my final exam. I said, in 2 weeks I can be back here if you want me to. And they said, well, that's a bit, we haven't finished the season yet. We'll call you in May. And they called me, and I haven't looked back since. I've been here, coming on for 10 years in August.
Could you imagine going back a few years that the path that it would take you, that you'd be sitting there pit side and actually doing the commentary in Spanish?
It ran through my mind when I was offered it. I thought, this is crazy. First of all, the fact that you can speak Spanish and you're able to do commentary in Spanish is just mental. But in the fact that you've managed to create this world for yourself and create this path for yourself. It was definitely one of my happier moments to be able to reflect back over the weekend on how far I've come.
I think it's a great story, and I think there's inspiration there for not just young coaches, but coaches the world over. It's a bit trite, but have you got a message for people that maybe feel a bit restricted in their own boundaries, what they can do across the world?
So my advice to coaches is to be brave and give it a go. You never know what's going to come of it, and often we stop ourselves from taking these leaps because we think they're huge leaps and we may fail from them. But in the end, you're just going to learn, and you've always got your support group back at home that you can fall back on if you need to, and you take another step forward in the future. Give it a go, because it's going to be something to tell your grandkids in the end.
Andrew, you've been a player, you've been a coach at an international level. Now you're a television media personality. Any chance you're going to cross to the dark side and become an administrator?
Not yet, no. I've got no plans. It hasn't crossed my mind at all.
Keely Dunn hasn't sent you an email saying if you'd like to trot out as an umpire at one stage?
No. I'm quite happy just to umpire the girls in their training sessions. That's good enough for me.
Very wise man, very wise. Now, Andrew, the Frank Hockey Podcast, where can people find it and where can they have a listen?
So you can pick it up on the Frank Hockey website, which is frankhockey.com. It's FRANCHOCKY. And you can always pick it up on SoundCloud as well, just searching for the Frank Hockey Podcast, or on the iTunes podcatcher as well.
That's fantastic.
And you're also on the Twitter and Facebook stuff as well. There's links to it there, Andrew?
Yeah, so on my Twitter, which is Andrew87Wilson, and also on Instagram, and also Frank Hockey UK also tweets it out as well.
Now, I reckon you could be on to a winner with some of the reviews that you're doing about books, because I noticed on Twitter this week that there was actually a sale came out of it.
Yeah, Tansy.
That's right. So TRS World, hashtag TRS World 11.
He wants to pick up the standard of the TRS World Hockey 11.
Well, we don't want to pick up the standard of it.
I do actually have a question for you, Andrew, because as the nominated coach of the TRS World 11, I wanted to ask Andy Locke, because he's the head coach there, exactly what's the correct angle to hold your file at, your clip file?
Clipboard,
yeah.
It depends if you really want the players to see what you're drawing or not.
Fair enough. It's more the effect. You know, is there a way I can hold it that the players know that I'm really being serious about things?
Yeah, you got to get it so the sun just flashes off into certain players' eyes and you catch their attention.
Well, John thinks he's onto a winner with his hairstyle anyway. He's emulating AD. Look, Andrew, thank you so much for joining us. We wish you and the Spanish girls every success at the upcoming World Cup. Obviously, lots and lots of hard work ahead of you there, and we look forward to catching that online. I think this week we're actually going to do a giveaway of that wonderful signed pennant as well we received from you when you're over.
Oh, lovely. Oh, that's fantastic.
So that'll be something we'll announce that a little bit later on in the show.
Will we? Will you announce it now?
Yeah, let's announce it now.
Okay.
Come on, John, keep up.
Yeah.
Andrew, thanks for joining us, champ. We'll speak soon.
Cheers, guys. It's a real pleasure. Keep up the good work, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow's episode.